Greetings, glorious beings. I'm Paulette, your host of Thriving in Chaos, the podcast. I'm thrilled to introduce you to sparkling examples of inspiring, powerful, wise, and trailblazing women. I've curated experts in their fields to help us all listen, learn, and grow towards all the possibilities of living your best life. As a certified divorce coach, I regularly witness a range of deep emotions. What those emotions have taught me is all we really need to support our sisters is to share our knowledge and loving kindness. Please subscribe, and thank you for sharing the love by tuning in. Now, let's thrive in the chaos. Welcome to the show today, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. If you don't know me, I'm Paulette, and I have a really special guest with me today. She is a young, effervescent example of what living in alignment with your dharma looks like. So those of you that know me from yoga know what dharma is, but those of you out there are like, she's talking yoga again. It's your purpose. Like, it's what are you doing here? What is your calling? Why are you on this earth? And what do you have to give and share? And you know, some of us find that at birth and we live in alignment with that really easily. And some of us never get it. We're still searching. I kind of think I might have been one of those late bloomers, but you know, I'm 55. I'm finally feeling like I know where I'm going. It's like a rebirth. Mm-hmm. So today we are going to talk about art, and I love art. I never really thought I loved art. I always thought art was one of those things that smart people or people that got their master's in art or could walk into an art gallery and name every single artist and really be aware of, mediums and all those other artsy terms. But to me, art is more of a passion and it comes from inside and you know immediately what you are attracted to. So I have found this incredible little glowing light and she's with me today.
Hello.
Her name is Megan Schaefer, spelt with both the A and the E. And if Natasha, if you're listening, I know you just have the A, but apparently this name is spelt many different ways. And she's also Megan without the H. Mm-hmm. So she's the Megan short, but the Schaefer long.
Exactly.
That can be tricky, right? Yep. Mm-hmm. So as most of you know, Steve and I moved to Georgia about 3 months ago. I know I'm still acclimating from Belize. It's getting a little cold here. Mm-hmm. Uh-oh, I'm in trouble. So when I did come here, I can't tell you how many people I fell in love with, just immediately the community, the people that both live here, work here, and come to visit here, short term for the weekend or the day or to have lunch, and also the people that really come for an event or a special event, a weekend. You just get to meet the coolest, clearest, most authentic people I've ever met, like really sparkling examples of authenticity. And the art community here is amazing. And I mean that, I really hate the word amazing because people throw it around a little too much. But being a dancer or an ex-dancer, a performing arts teacher, director, choreographer, like dance to me was art. And when I first came here, there's these billboards right next to the coffee shop. And there's maybe 5 or 6, maybe 7 big billboards with the traditional white, stage lights surrounding the circumference of the picture, and they look like something you'd see in a town or a city or like something a little bit more urban than Serenby. And I thought, oh my God, they have theater and dance? And then I went a little bit further and there's actually an art gallery. And the more I lived here and the more I realized that art is a serious thing here. It is completely embraced and honored and it engulfs a lot of the lifestyle here. So I knew that it was something I needed to dig a little bit deeper in. And then I went to a couple classes. There was a dinner that a wonderful artist or two had collaborated in. They had a wonderful dinner. There was a create your own planner class that was really interesting. I met a lot of people that actually live and work here. And then just in general, there's a number of events that are at the gallery. Mm-hmm. But who's to know, there's also the AIR, mm-hmm. I said that mm-hmm. backwards, AIR Residence, Artist in Residence Program, mm-hmm. which is an acronym, even though it looks like AIR. Yes. Like, oh, there's AIR. That's nice. We need AIR. I'm like, oh, it's an acronym, right? Yep. Mm-hmm. So before I knew it, it was really important to me to delve deep into the art, not just the nature, mm-hmm. and to also see how those two things overlap and intermingle mm-hmm. here as a lifestyle and being in Agrahood. So it seems that the management here has really dug deep to find somebody that knows her stuff. And I'm not going to read Megan's bio, but let's just say she's got her BA in arts management and studied art extensively. So welcome to the show, Megan.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. Here we are in Serenby, kind of talking about everything we do here and everything that I love to do here, all the freedom that I've had to create these programs and run fun events. I've been here for about 2.5 years. Prior to that, I kind of grew up in the arts, so I've been surrounded by this stuff for a long time. Mm. I also was a dancer. I did competitive POMs, you know, the POM team.
I had no idea.
It's kind of a Maryland thing from what I understand. Okay. I ask a lot of people and they're like, I don't know what you mean. Kickline, hip hop, like a 7-minute routine. It's like what you see on ESPN and they're holding pom-poms.
I choreograph stuff like that. I get it. Yeah. Yes. It's intense.
It is intense and it's super coordinated and it actually leaves a lot of room for... you have to be really tight, but you don't really get to be very creative. So it was an interesting way mm-hmm. to learn dance.
Yeah.
But anyway, so
precision,
that's kind of
precision,
where...
Precision.
Exactly.
Yeah, which
exactly.
isn't so leaning towards being creative.
Not really. So I did that in high school and then kind of found visual art as I went to college. There was the arts management major at the College of Charleston where I went to school. And I was one of those lucky people. I know so many people who are like, I don't really know, like I've only wanted to do art. I've never wanted to do anything else. So when I found the arts management major, it was the perfect combination of management and organizing and business and supporting artists and then actually working close to art, to artists, event planning, all these things that I like because I'm not really an artist. I don't really like to make art. That's what's weird. Making art stresses me out. Mm. Supporting artists' careers and working in communities, making communities creative, making sure art is accessible. I loved what you were saying about you think art is for smart people. You think art is only, you know, it's you can only walk into a museum if you're going to know how to read the wall label.
Sure, it's like going into a wine store and they ask you what you want. You're like, I don't know, wine.
I'm like, red.
Right, red, yeah. And you walk into a gallery and they're like, can I help you? And you're like, I want to buy something I like.
Right, but like, I don't know the pricing structure. I don't want to embarrass myself. And I get that.
It's intimidating.
It is. It's so intimidating. And often I'm intimidated too, like even still. So my kind of goal in my personal life is to make sure that that intimidation goes away. And so this job at Serenby has been super directly related to that. Because as you know, we have classes that are art adjacent. They're like kind of arty, but you know, we have everything from a sip and paint to, you know, advanced oil painting classes, kind of everything in between.
Mm-hmm. And intro to advanced.
Yeah. Well, intro, like we do these corporate workshops here that, there's literally, I mean, you know, 50-year-old men that are like, I have not picked up a paintbrush since I was 3 years old. And then by the end, they're like the best in the class. So, but they wouldn't have had an entry point any other way. Mm-hmm. So I love creating new entry points for people who don't feel like they're artsy fartsy. They don't feel like they're creative. Right. You can just tell it's just not really what they're into. Like they'd rather be at Topgolf and, you know, and I'm trying to make a way for them to tap in and really be able to paint or draw or do ceramics or do whatever, talk about art, come to an art opening, and not feel like there's a barrier to entry.
Well, you make a good point, Megan, because the accessibility mm-hmm. of art isn't always in our communities. Mm-mm. We might see it at the YMCA or a business that's in town that has children's art classes or maybe... intro to sculpting or ceramics mm-hmm. or painting or whatever.
Something like
but
that.
But you've got to get it to fit into your schedule mm-hmm. and then You know, is it cost accessible for some people? And, you know, the stigma attached to, well, oh, I don't want to be perceived as, you know, too artsy, or what if I suck?
Yeah, the what if I suck is huge.
It is a huge thing.
And that just is so unimportant. I mean, unless you're trying to be a career artist and you're building this, you know, this thing, then sure, you probably shouldn't, you know,
suck.
Or you should strive to, like, unsuck.
But
if you're just trying to have fun, that's really what it's all about. It's just about relaxing, expressing yourself, and making things, getting your hands dirty, you know? It's important.
Well, the thing I wanted to focus on today, besides just my story of how we met and your story,
yeah,
how you got into this art realm, is how, in my experience, particularly with friends and clients and even family, I've noticed that when there's stress in your life or a challenge or some sort of trauma or some, you know, upheaval, a lot of the things that people gravitate to heal or to expedite or to make more the healing more, you know, expedient, quicker, versus sitting on the couch and crying and swearing and drinking yourself to death and going, you know, or pretending or deny, all the other coping mechanisms is art.
Yeah.
I've seen just poetry. I used to start writing poetry. In fact, I did write a book of 72 poems. I haven't published it yet, but I plan to. Writing for me was very cathartic and it felt organic. And as soon as I let go of the I suck at this and just let the damn words
flow
out of my heart and my soul, and I after I did it and I read it, I don't know if it sucked or not, but it felt good. And then I started sketching or scribbling or just doodling and not really digging art so much as far as painting and drawing, but just really enjoying art as a feeling of connection. So what I wanted to focus a little bit is how you as a pro, you know,
arts manager,
you know, to be able to curate that in people who are suffering or stuck in whether a job they hate or a situation that's just very overwhelming, or they're really going through a life change, whether it be a disease or cancer or a death or a divorce or some sort of revelation, to really consider art as a healing and a therapeutic modality.
Yeah. So, I mean, speaking from a personal level, like, we all have problems. We all have different things that we go through. And as I rapidly approach my 30s, like we were talking about,
I know, old woman,
around the corner. You know, it's life is hard no matter kind of where you are. You always struggle. So for me personally, I know that I gravitate to art, as release, as, you know, a distraction that's not your phone, a distraction that's not going on Facebook.
Absolutely.
You know, like, for it makes you put your stuff down. And it really just focuses your brain in a healthy way. Whether you're just doing bubble letters, like, we're not even talking, you know, you don't even need to be sketching a tree. When I say art, I mean just, you know, fiddling with a piece of Play-Doh. Like, you can just be doing something tactile with your hands or writing in your notes section on your computer. Like, we're not, do you know what I mean? There's such a low level of entry in this way where you just need to express yourself. You know, you need to just get out there, go on Pinterest, look up a craft, make a table piece for your, you know, your dining room table. There's so many ways to just release. And for me, it's meditation. And I have seen people that are super adverse to these types of things, this meditational kind of world, which I kind of have been. I'm not, you know, I really love yoga, but I'm not so much about the woo-woo stuff. I've gotten, you know, more into it. But for me, I see people meditate when they're able to paint a picture of a horse. You know, it's hard to paint a picture of a horse, but when they start seeing these forms come to life, and they're like, oh my gosh, the head really looks real. I see people detach from their problems and they're able to really just be them, be in a state of flow, which it's really hard to do. It's hard for me to do. So to see that is just really, really beautiful.
Well, you know, you bring up this marvelous point of meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be a very overwhelming topic in itself.
It is. Because and I don't think meditational is a word. I said that. I don't think it is, but whatever.
It's a word now. No, I think you said meditation. You may have said meditational. I have the habit of making up words too, so join the club. Just so you know, and those of you guys listening that are, you know, into this woo-woo yoga thing, is that the word for meditation, there's actually three of them. Hmm. There's an eight-limb process, and, you know, that goes through the yamas and the niyamas, step one and two, which are the things you don't do and the things you do.
Mm.
Okay? The third one are the asanas, or the mm-hmm. pretty little pictures you mm-hmm. see on the cover of the yoga journal. And then the fourth one is pranayama, which is breath work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the things you do, the things you don't do, the body,
mm-hmm.
right, connecting back to the body awareness, and then the breath work.
Mm.
And then 5, 6, 7, and 8 are pratyahara, is sense withdrawal. When you actually kind of dial down mm-hmm. the outside stuff, mm-hmm. right? Hello, Facebook.
And some of us need help. You know, I struggle to sit there with myself and be able to do that on my own. So I feel like having a method, having a tool,
mm-hmm.
For me, artsy things are a perfect tool.
Because it withdraws you from your senses.
It does.
It dials down the stimulus mm-hmm. of what you hear yeah. and see and think and feel because
exactly.
it's zoning
because you
in
have
on
to
one
mild,
dot.
Exactly. You have to mildly focus on this one thing.
Yeah.
And as long as you're not putting that pressure on yourself to like do it really well and
perfection.
You know,
yeah.
You know, don't plan to post a picture of it on Facebook. Don't plan, like just do it. And you find that you're really able to dissociate mm-hmm. and you're able to just be and have fun.
Well, that's a whole nother part of yoga, of not attaching to things.
Sure. So that's not the seven...
No, it's a different concept, abhyasa and viragya. Mm-hmm. Viragya is not attachment, abhyasa mm. is practice.
Oh.
So the only thing that you really need to do in yoga is to practice
mm-hmm.
and non-attach.
Mm-hmm.
What do you practice? Well, you know that's different for everybody.
But that's the same
Maybe
exact thing
Maybe sitting and
art.
Breathing? Exactly.
Yeah.
So you'd be surprised how much yoga you're practicing
right.
without doing the asana.
Yeah.
The posture. So now that you've done the things you should do and done the things you shouldn't do, right, and that's a whole nother podcast, and got your body to be in a sense of awareness, you've connected to the breath because that's what keeps us alive. When I ask you to close your eyes and take a deep breath in, where are you?
I am still right. here, but I feel like I need to take a breath
okay,
out.
Well, exhale, yeah. Right. So, and then exhale. So you're actually in the body of
yeah.
the process of breathing.
Well, I'm actually thinking about my body, which I was not before, you
right.
know?
Yeah. It's a different, so it's getting yeah. more in tune with
you
the body as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going quickly. And then we get into pratyahara, this sense withdrawal, but going back to meditation.
Mm.
So there's you and here's like an object.
Yeah.
And then so step six is when you're aware of the object. Like here's you and here's your, the object. You're focusing. It's called tataka, where you actually focus on something. And then it's sort of like a zeroing in
mm.
on, so here's the withdrawal and then the focus on the paintbrush or the color or the whatever you're, you know, looking at a model and you're trying mm-hmm. to look at the shape of the nose or the mm-hmm. eyelash or whatever. And so that's step six. And then step seven is when the artist and the art become one.
Right, sure.
So the artist is now the paintbrush. The artist is now mm-hmm. the paint. The mm-hmm. artist is the subject.
Mm-hmm.
The art, they all become one little,
right.
you know, amoeba mm-hmm. of oneness, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then eight, which is actually the last one. So actually step seven is a sense of meditation. When you are separate, when you are then now encapsulated in the breath, in the body, in the moment. But then eight, oops, sorry about the book there, Bonnie. Number eight is when this is what happens. So here's six, where you and the object are separate, but you're focused on each other.
Mm-hmm.
Seven is when you connect.
Mm-hmm.
And eight is when you and the object vanish and you no longer exist.
Right, right.
That's step eight. It's called samadhi. And yeah,
isn't
we'll get there someday.
When you're able to get there. Right. When you're
yeah.
even able to come close, it's really beautiful.
So you see now that
yeah.
yoga and art aren't different.
Well, I argue yoga is art in a way, as dance is also an art, you know.
Absolutely.
It's a way to express yourself and a way to relax.
Mm-hmm.
I ask a lot of artists, professional artists, and they're like, I'm not relaxed, but you know, they have a calling to make art, and it's a bit of a different ballgame. But for me, bringing craft and art together has been a theme for me here in Serenbe, because I've seen a need in the community. People want to learn here. When they move here, it's just the most interesting people I've ever met in my entire life. The people that have decided to be in Serenbe, because it's a unique place. You need to make a decision to live here, to be a part of the community. But the people who are raising their kids here, the people who are aging here, the people who are just, even this is their second or third home and this is their weekend home, they're still in the community and they have these needs. They're also super curious. So our gallery openings, our classes, our dinners, our Art Over Dinner series, they show up and they're willing to learn. There's an openness here, which is, it's greater than I've seen in other places, living in other cities, growing up outside of DC. It's not a typical situation, which makes my job even easier, because when I put something on the table and I say, do you guys, are you interested in this? We should bring this artist in. We should do this. Let's have an event. Let's have a talk. Let's do nature sketching. Let's be in the woods and draw this tree that looks like a lizard. People are up for it, which has been really beautiful because I've been able to see those moments. So yeah, it's been really nice.
All right, let's shift gears a little bit here to where you see the biggest challenges with the art community as a whole going forward into the next decade. You know, we've got, I think it's 81 days left in this decade. I read that today. So there's 81 days left before we go and move into our next decade.
You know, I have not thought about that at all, the fact that we're beginning a new decade. I think fall is a very busy time here, so I feel like we rush to the finish line with our event season in fall, and then I find so much joy in planning for a new year, and I'm you know, doing that now. In terms of our challenges and what I see, I mean, with the arts, I mean, not to be a Debbie Downer, but it's always funding.
Yes.
That's kind of what it circles back to. People need to continue to collect art. People need to continue to buy art from local people and frame with local people and do different things like that. And they need to be continuing to take classes and be open to learning new things. We like to keep our classes very affordable. So really people just need to continue to show up. And I think that actually is kind of a life, you know, it's not just in the arts, like just continue to show up for yourself and for your community.
So going back to, I know you were young and you're still young, younger.
Sure.
You know, I loved how you said, I hadn't even thought that we're entering into a new
decade.
No,
I really hadn't thought about it.
But this is a big shift now. If you look into numerology, and I won't get into a lot of other things, but with macrobiotics, numerology is very big, and it's shifting into a new decade is quite powerful. Let's go back to the year 2000 and the progress or not that has been made from the last decade, and here we are just on the, you know, the cusp of yet
another
10 and then 10 to 20.
Wild.
Where, you know, in the arts community or in your studies, you know, I think back to when I was studying art and it was memorizing the photographs of Ansel Adams and understanding the different styles of European, you know, realism versus...
I'd love to take those classes
all this
again.
Type of, like, very,
I love it.
Like, general but really profound art classes that open your eyes to, you know, studying art as a serious, you know, student of art. But we're talking about really shifting artist therapy. We talked about connecting art to being in the moment, where you can... forget all the things you think you are and just dive deep into the medium and the experience. And whether you love what you create and you end up framing it and hanging it on the wall.
Or you can throw it in the trash.
Or you make a fire.
Sure.
Kindling,
kumbaya around it. Yeah, exactly.
True. You know, do you think the art community as a whole is embracing or rejecting art as a... this is a career, it's to be taken seriously, I'm, you know, an artist, I'm a just, I would also say, as a singer, as an actor, mm-hmm. as a dancer, as an artist, you know, anything in the creative world.
Yeah.
There's mm-hmm. that population of purists, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, definitely.
That kind of see art as an elitist kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think they would probably like to not think that they think that, but they probably do.
Well, I don't say that to be like critical, but a little bit in my observation of
sure.
I am an artist.
Well, and there is a right way to do some of these mediums. There's a correct mm-hmm. way to, you know, do oil painting. There's a correct way to understand
color
theory.
There's a technique, of course.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, but yeah. But as with these types of things, it's pretty subjective and kind of squishy. It's squishier than math. You know, mm-hmm. math has an answer. You know.
Yeah, there's no 1 + 1 =
Not really. Although, you know, people like to create those categories and boxes to make themselves feel comfortable. And there are some absolutes in that world. But I think addressing your question about going into 2020 as opposed to 2000 or 2010, I mean, I think the most obvious thing that we're dealing with now is just a complete transformation in digital media. Mm-hmm. And just having the internet in the first place in the 21st century is what I've noticed. It's made people go either one way or the other really far. So mm-hmm. the people who are painters, they're not willing to use the apps to do the things. They're like, they're rejecting some of these new technologies that arguably make things easier.
Mm-hmm.
And then some people are going all in. Like the art that is using technology for good, using
right.
technology to make the art. Like
So as in photography that's digitized and
yeah.
actually I'm not familiar. Can you
sure,
tell
yeah.
us more about the apps?
Oh yeah. So well there's like for example, there's an organization out of Hogansville, Georgia that I'm just a really huge fan of right now. Called Positive Fields, and basically they're using technology to actually make art, using coding to make generative art, you use coding to make a piece that you could print out.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
You can use coding to dictate colors and shapes and things. It's beyond me for sure. It's beyond my depth, but
okay.
Basically using coding and all of these new things to create art and music and sound art and all these things. I think that's just a huge field right now, being explored by organizations like Positive Fields. But I think that's the big shift that we'll see.
That's really interesting.
On marketing art.
I hadn't really thought about
yeah,
that,
yeah, just even on a more of a layman's level, using social media, being a professional artist and in the art world, and even as an arts manager, having to understand how to adequately use the marketing tools that we have with social media, with newsletters, it's all kind of changing.
Mm-hmm.
It's all, you know, how do we get to people? How do we market these events? How do we market these services?
Well, and with the, to continue along further with the apps and the art that's digital, you have so many apps, and I don't have them all memorized, but I'll use Canva as an example.
Sure.
Of that, something that's rather user-friendly, if
yep,
you have a little bit of patience,
yep.
to kind of learn, just deleted what I just spent 2.5 hours on because I hit the wrong thing. But
if you're not willing to learn Photoshop, I mean, that's just...
Right. It's a nice entry-level, user-friendly way to create art.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that's
digital. Or a postcard, exactly.
Right, and then I do actually know someone that's a photographer back in Boston that takes his photography and colorizes mm-hmm. it and adds
right.
like random things and mm-hmm. makes these really beautiful pieces of art out mm-hmm. of his photography.
Yep.
His name is Jim Weber. Hi, Jim, if you're listening.
Hello, Jim.
And they're beautiful. he was probably the first person I was introduced by seeing art from photography.
Right.
And not just like a beautiful photograph of somebody in a
yes.
gorgeous, you know, mm-hmm. glittery, sexy frame. Like, wow, that's a great photograph. But taking photography and
yeah.
making it really artistic.
Exactly. We have a photography show up right now in our gallery space in Ganey Hall. And one of our photographers, she uses her iPhone and she uses, you know,
right.
She doesn't use this like, you know, long lens DSLR, you know, but her work is so beautiful. And then she, she colors on top of it. So it's a mixed media photograph.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we wouldn't have been able to really even know what this is 20 years ago
no.
or even 10 years ago. We
right.
really, I mean, this is all new. So
mm-hmm.
I think with 2020, imagine the newness. Well, imagine our conversation in 2030. I mean, I don't actually know.
You know, it's going to be cool.
It's going to be cool because we're kind of snowballing into this decade with technological.
And what's accepted and what isn't. I mean, let's look back to the days of graffiti.
Yeah.
And the New York City subway. You know, graffiti was born, I think, in Brooklyn, in the New York City subways or the trains. And it was the, you know, angst of the impoverished and the inability for them to share their anger or communicate their, you know, feelings and other than a spray can.
Yeah, well, and now street art is super normalized.
Exactly.
Yeah, and with Banksy and everybody.
Belize, you know, where we live, they just commissioned these very incredible artists. It's much more of graphic street art than graffiti with the bubble letters and that kind of stuff with a little bit of the gang stuff, which can be a little bit edgy and a little scary.
Well, you know,
and
there's a whole conversation of graffiti versus vandalism, and I think that, like, you edge on that line when you're
defacing a public building don't own, and then it becomes criminal. Oh, and like
many a paper has been written about
it's very disturbing when you go to Europe and you see these buildings from 1300s, and some total selfish whoever decided to think that black spray paint would be a good thing to do on a castle. So, you know, find a cardboard box or I don't care, a shipping container or something. I really do respect the need to communicate and share and get out your creativity and your emotions, but not at the expense of the castle.
Exactly. Yeah. And I would think that there's organizations that are appealing to kids in that way with street art. I can't name them, but I'm sure they're out there.
But now that we're shifting from, you know, easel, oil paint, you know, the purists and all that, and now we're talking about digital art and art, social media as art in some maybe functional or dysfunctional way. That's another podcast, right?
Right.
And considering that art really is a time to unplug and separate and dial down external confusion, external voices and fear and trauma that people have gone through, to start to really reconnect to the soul and to find their purpose, because not everybody is as lucky as you to know. And you said it with such conviction, I always knew.
Yeah, I always knew I wanted to do something like
this. Not everybody's so lucky that.
Right, yeah. It took my boyfriend a long time to figure out what his calling was. You know, it just doesn't come to you right away. And now he's doing environmental law, and he's super good at it and very passionate about saving the environment. And that's been a really cool journey to watch, too, to see someone go from not really knowing in particular, super smart, but didn't really know
just
what
going
he...
through the motions.
Yeah, for sure. To being all in on something. And I just, it really is unfortunate that people don't get to that point of wanting to be all in on something. Like,
why
this is what I want
is?
To change. This is what I want to do. Life is distracting. And I think especially, and I can't speak to this, but once you start to build a family and once, you know, things just happen, years go by, and then you're like, wait, what do I want to do? But like, what do I really want to do? Besides go shop at Target and go and drink a bunch of wine with my friends, which is fun, but what do I want to do?
What do I want to accomplish?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Well, my distraction, you know, which is, I mean, I think I finally decided that I know what I'm doing and doing it well, but it did take me the last, I think since 2012, when
that's
I started really doing
ago.
Teacher trainings.
Yeah.
No, I mean, and I can relate to a lot of what you're sharing with dance, but I didn't really love dance. I loved creating dance or curating dance. I loved bringing it out in others that had no other way of expressing their emotion. Like, dance always felt easy to me. Dance was kind of like brushing my teeth. I know it just sort of, you know, through genetics, it kind of like Rhonda Jam, Glissai, Padishah, like I was like, okay, I got that. But I could see the kid that couldn't have that same innate,
They're going through the eight count, but they're not really thinking about how it's making them feel. They're not letting go either.
I'm talking dance because I know you dance, but that feeling that comes from here inside you, that as a choreographer was much more gratifying. Like I get excited just remembering those days.
I'm seeing, so on that topic, I'm seeing Laura tonight.
Are
you? Oh, yes. Gosh, I'll see you there. Yeah. I feel like I see you everywhere in San Diego. It's so lovely.
I run into each other all the time.
Modern Ballet Theater here, Terminus Modern Ballet Theater, and they are a wonderful example of having like completely amazing skills. Most of them are from Atlanta Ballet, but the whole reason why they wanted to create this small company, this contemporary modern company, is to get away from that like strict eight count, these are the moves, don't think about it, just like you're almost not having any fun anymore, to these extra creative almost art exhibitions, in my opinion. It transcends
spontaneous expression.
Yeah, but still completely professional and super high end, super high level. You'll see tonight. I'm really excited. I know.
Former dancer choreographer. I love watching.
You have to give me a little. What you think about it?
Okay, I'll let you know. But I'm sure their technique will be flawless. But
you know,
it's exciting to see. Art come together as a complete package. So it isn't just, oh, we have a dance company, or oh, we have a theater. I mean, the theater group here is also mind-blowing. Yeah, I was floored by Hair.
Yeah.
And what was the first show I saw? We did see Pocahontas.
And there's Jungle Book this year.
We didn't see that. It was Hair, obviously. Yeah, it was, we were just overwhelmed to see
Ragtime.
We just missed Ragtime. Yeah, sure. I forget what else we saw.
Listeners, have you talked about the Playhouse on here before?
No, I haven't.
All site specific theater, so they don't actually have a location, which is, I would imagine, very challenging as a
they just create sets out of the woods out of platforms, out of buses.
They literally build things over streams
or the water.
Yeah, exactly. So
yeah, they use rocks and trees and whatever they need to create the actual. When they did Titanic, they made like a metal
scaffolding.
They were
in the lake. Yeah, they were in the lake.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
But now, you know, that we're considering, you know, seeing that art is so much more than a canvas and a paintbrush or a dance performance or a theater group or whatever, but it really is an expression of reconnecting to the self and listening to the soul and finding a way to really truly sit and listen to the soul. And if you sit long enough, it's gonna talk to you.
Yeah.
But you have to be willing to listen. And the distractions are a killer. For me, it was feeling like I had to live the life that somebody else wanted me to live. And really just wanting other people to make my decisions for me. Because if they didn't work out, well, it's not my fault.
Exactly.
You decide. You told me to do that.
You have to be willing to experiment. You have to be willing to take risks. You have to be willing to try something new. And it's really hard.
And you also have to be willing to take responsibility
for
your decisions and your, you know, mistakes and your triumphs.
Yeah.
Because we are human.
But you won't get to the triumph point unless you try something new, unless you do something different, unless you, you know, take responsibility.
Never. I love the quote. I think it's, you know, Steve Jobs that, you know, he got 1,000 no's before it was a yes. You know,
I mean,
Michael Jordan lost, I don't know, a lot more, you know, missed a lot more balls than went in the hoop. And you know, all of these experts in their fields, whether it be sport or art or dance or life or, you know, any business, failed much before they succeeded.
And they were willing to do it. Right. And that's a really good reminder for someone who is around my age. I haven't experienced a lot in the first place being 28, but I can't be afraid to fail, and I can't be afraid to try new things, because I already feel myself getting into a fear moment of not, I need to be perfect, I need to be, you know, on the upswing, I need to be energetic, I need to be, you know, push, but I don't think that caters to, like, sustainability. Like, I don't think it's sustainable.
No.
You know, you have to be willing to try things and fail, you have to be, you know, willing to go with the punches, if that makes any sense.
It does.
And I think around now, at least in my life, and I know in a lot of my friends' lives, we're getting to this point where it's like, okay, like kind of what's next? You know, we're feeling, as I told you before, which was funny, you were like, well, I'm still waiting. I feel like I just became sort of an adult. I'm just figuring out this thing of feeling legitimate, dealing with imposter syndrome, feeling like people are actually starting to listen and actually taking me seriously, relatively, you know what I'm saying? So it takes a while.
Oh God, I was teaching dance for 10 years and had 15 classes with, you know, between 16 and 24 plus kids in each class, and had choreographed, you know, at least 100 plus pieces before I felt like I knew what the hell I was doing.
Right.
You know,
and that's just,
I kept doing it for 10
you know?
More years after that.
Wow.
So now that, you know, I still can kind of resonate with that life that I used to live. It never leaves you, but it was a stepping stone.
Sure.
So where is your career going to take you?
And that's the thing. I think I just need to be open. Yeah, be open and make sure to pay attention to self-care too, which I think is big. As much as my generation is that's a big buzzword for us. I actually don't know if we follow through. I you know, we're kind of wrestling with it.
And I, you know, have a lot of compassion for people born that are now between 18 or the younger generation. Let's not even go down there.
But we don't really know.
We don't know what's going on with that. Like the 18 to 20s, the kids that are just starting, you know, secondary college education, getting out of, you know, mom and dad's realm of control and being able to have a little more of a voice and freedom and independence and responsibility. It comes with both. You don't get the freedom without the responsibility.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And those that get the responsibility without the independence.
I just changed a car title over for the first
time
the other day.
Yeah.
It's miserable, but I guess that's what it's being a doll is like.
Yeah. It's not as easy. You know, we didn't have seatbelts.
That's so crazy.
We did have seatbelts, but my mother cut them out of the car.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, because they were just,
still here.
Yeah. And, you know, when she took me home from the hospital, it was in her arms, in the passenger seat. My dad drove. There was no car seat.
Yeah, wow.
And she didn't get arrested. It was the 60s. I mean, everybody smoked cigarettes.
Right.
Everybody smoked cigarettes.
Right.
If you didn't, you pretended you did because you weren't cool.
Ah.
And, just partying and drinking. The drinking age was 18.
Right.
It was totally different. Make love, not war, the 60s, 70s, all that, the Beatles and Vietnam.
But you're able to have a retrospective.
Well, I was a baby back then.
Able to look back on that now. But now we're coming up now and if you're in your 20s now, we don't really know what that will be yet.
I know. Honestly. We have no idea. And then,
but the biggest shift is having, you know, online identities. Like I've had a Facebook since I was in ninth grade. You know, it's it was new then, and I'm so happy it didn't exist before then. But
well, I know if I had Facebook in high school, I would have probably got, you know, put in jail or something. We would have posted things that were like, oh, everybody's drinking in the woods tonight. You know, like it.
You don't think that's happening now?
I know. I'm just thinking, how would we have survived?
It's a totally different ball game. So
it is scary.
You know, yeah.
And I am happy that we survived. But there was a sense of innocence, Megan.
I know, because you didn't have to post about your experiences.
Your
mom didn't even know where you were.
We didn't know to share them. It was just...
Right.
Was told to get home when the streetlights came on when I was like 7.
Sure.
I was just on the neighborhood street. It's not like I was far away. But we didn't have abductions. Or if we did, it was few. We didn't have school shootings.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't OxyContin
overdoses.
There wasn't 9/11. There wasn't terrorism. Yeah. We had other things to think about and worry about. You know, there was still, you know, Vietnam and Korea and, you know, there was Watergate and like nothing. Trust me.
And you still have bullying
everything
and
new,
all these things.
Everything old is new again. It's all the same thing.
We've
been watching this stuff about Rome and the, you know, Caesar and the Roman Empire. Let's see, there was infidelity.
Sure.
There was corruption. There was betrayal. There was abuse. I mean, there's nothing new.
No, nothing new.
It's just
about
the same old shit recycled.
A different iteration of
it. But the problem now is that everybody knows your business.
Yeah, that's really the thing.
And there's no privacy.
Well, and I heard on another podcast I was listening to recently that privacy will be the new celebrity. Like, I thought that that was really interesting.
Ooh, tell me more about that.
Well, kind of the idea is that the most elusive and kind of exclusive opportunity in the future will be actually having privacy, mm-hmm. actually keeping your data to yourself and
right.
Not being like so transparent and understand, like, does that,
so, it does, it
but
does.
Privacy is the new celebrity because, mm-hmm. You just won't,
because the celebrity dome,
but you'll have to pay for it.
Well, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, the celebrity dome has been so connected to being seen, mm-hmm. and being heard and being important and being, like of regard, like mm-hmm. that they matter, mm-hmm. you know, because your 15 minutes
they've
of
always
fame,
been able to be elusive, and now they don't really need to be, but now the celebrity is being private, and that's, you know,
right. It's interesting.
Anyway, mm-hmm. so I thought that was interesting, but we'll see.
I know. Well, here's to 2020.
I know. And here's to just walking in the woods without our phones too. I mean, I think that
I
there's
know.
A,
I'm going to go take a walk with Steve after we yeah. wrap up our little conversation here. And enjoy seeing the show tonight. But
yeah.
Thank you for your time. And to everybody out there, I hope you found this really fun. And I want you to not be intimidated by art. The next mm-hmm. time you see an art gallery opening,
yeah.
go.
Come on in.
The next time you see a class that intrigues you, do it.
Do it.
The next time you feel the need or the, you know, inkling to pick up a pen and write a poem
yeah.
or scribble
and feel
or
silly.
Doodle.
Feel silly. And
do
just,
it.
Yeah, exactly.
You'd be surprised what will happen.
It'll probably feel good.
And that's
thank
what
you
we're
so
here
much.
To do.
Thank you for
well,
having
Well, everybody,
me.
Thanks for tuning in and keep thriving in the chaos.